Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Complimentary Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Katie Langerman, joined as always by Anthony Hobday. And today we're going to be getting into the nitty-gritty of interface design roles. This kind of came up as a listener topic. I think someone wanted us to talk about job titles, and that's a tricky topic.
Yep, we refuse.
Because titles are different everywhere. Yeah, titles don't necessarily matter in the context of what we're talking about today. So our spin on it is to basically go through all the different responsibilities that you might find in an interface design role.
Mm. And I think this list I've written down ends up being basically based around skills. So that's another way to think of responsibilities is what are you capable of? Mm-hmm. And generally the thing you're capable of is what you're asked to do by the business. If you're lucky and those things align, you might be capable of making cannoli, but probably you wouldn't be asked to do that in an interface design role. But if you're great at, research or whatever, then that's probably going to be one of your responsibilities mm-hmm. if they're smart about it.
Right. Okay.
I've written a list and I'm going to read through it. There's a lot of items in here. I'm going to read through it quickly because I want to give an idea of the scope yes. to people who are listening. Because if you've got a job and you've got a list of responsibilities or a list of skills that you use on a daily basis, you might not think about the rest of them. So I just want to set the scene here and then we can talk through it.
Great.
Okay, so I've got discovery and research, product knowledge, market research, competitor research, commercial awareness, ideation, information architecture, interaction design, visual design exploration, prototyping, usability testing, visual design polish, content design, motion and animation design, mobile design, marketing design, which includes things like websites and social media images. That's probably quite a big category. Front end development. That's a slightly controversial one. Illustration, 3D modeling, product marketing and growth. Now, we basically ran through and wrote these down, and it's not meant to be comprehensive, but it is meant to give a sense of the things that an interface designer probably could do and that would help them to be a better interface designer.
Yes.
There's a caveat there about lots of these things are dedicated roles. You get people who do 3D modeling just for their career. And so I didn't want to suggest that.
Right.
I think interface designers should 3D model just that. If you're designing a website and you need some 3D models for it, you might not have access to a 3D modeler. And it probably helps you earn more money and be more successful if you can also, for example, model things in 3D.
Yeah, if you're in a position where you have the opportunity to learn some of these things that are maybe not things you're familiar with, just because I feel like this happens more often than not in a really small team, maybe a startup kind of vibe where you're the person wearing all the hats, doing all the things. Mm. It's pretty cool to be given to basically be paid to learn how to do things that are related to your job. I think that's something that a lot of designers have in common is just the curiosity and willingness to learn new things. So these are some things that might come up for you in depending on your role that you could explore.
Yeah. That's a good point about sort of the generalist role at a startup because, I often wish that I was an illustrator, for example, because we used to work with an illustrator and they left the company. And things have suffered a bit in terms of the options we have available to us. And AI isn't generally good enough yet to make the kinds of illustrations you might need for the kinds of websites we might design. And that's often things like line drawings, like very simple illustrations. AI often makes it's good at making these very visually rich, elaborate illustrations. And those aren't good for much apart from sort of cover images and things at the top of a blog post, for example. Mm-hmm. So, but we sort of touched on this already. It leads into the first question, which I think is an important one, given the long list I just read out. Can or should someone do all of these things in a role?
I don't think so. Not all of these things. I firmly believe in doing multiple things in a role. I don't think you need to ignore all the other aspects of interface design and just to narrowly focus on one thing, though you could. I think some of the things on this list are more specialized than others. Like you mentioned, 3D modeling is one. you could definitely narrow in on. Mobile design is another where a lot of designers like will only work on mobile apps and not web interfaces. So, and yeah, I guess I don't think you should do all of these things because I think at some point you will hit a wall and reach a point of like you can't be great at, I guess we didn't number these, at this massive list of things. You can't be great at all of these things. I think you can be great at three or four things maybe.
I just realized I didn't include typography in this list, which is quite a big
that
one.
It is big.
And related is type design, which I know that some designers do sort of dive into.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wouldn't describe it as a superpower, but they've definitely got another option open to them. If they wanted to make their personal website, for example, really stand out, they could design custom lettering, for example, for their header. You know, so they're all options and none of them are necessary. Well, probably some of the ones I mentioned are necessary. None of them are really necessary, but all of them are helpful. And so it's tricky to know what you should aim for if you're a designer.
Yeah.
If you've got this list of things you could learn.
Some of these are helpful in different ways. Like you mentioned, like some of these are helpful for your professional career. And then as you mentioned, like learning how to create a typeface, you might not do that. Well, you probably won't do that in your day-to-day as an interface designer, but it helps you in your personal projects, or maybe it's just a fun thing that you want to do. I think there's other things on this list. Like front-end development is one. Maybe you don't do that in your day-to-day, but you do build your own personal website or you do build side projects, and that gives you a little bit of an edge and could potentially open up some other opportunities as well. So it's not all about career trajectory, I guess, with these things.
But I mean, in general, I suppose the more you do in your side projects, the more sort of areas you explore, probably the more people are impressed with you. And so it definitely has those career benefits, even if a future job you apply for and get because of those side interests.
Yep.
Maybe you never actually use those skills in that job, but it still shows that you are interested in things other than the limited set you are asked to do.
Right.
I was curious about how this list could be split up into roles. And this is why it connects to the listener suggestion of how do you compare these job titles, is that the job titles themselves are sort of arbitrary, but actually those job titles often point at a collection of skills like these ones.
Mm-hmm.
And it changes, like you said, per company. So it might be that a product designer at one company is expected to do a little bit of prototyping, and a product designer at a different company is expected to know more about the competitors or do some market research. And maybe there's less overlap there than people assume when they hear the title of product designer, or when maybe they're looking to hire a product designer and they're just looking for people who have had that title. It's not particularly helpful to see that because you need everyone to agree or more or less agree what that means. Whereas actually, if you can think about it in terms of skills and responsibilities, maybe you can dive into it more.
Right.
Although I do want to avoid any discussion of those progress meters or progress bars people used to put on their CVs and resumes.
Yeah.
Which is sort of like they're trying to actually list out some of these skills and they're trying to say how good they are at it. So I quite like the concept.
Mm.
It's just completely unreliable again and not particularly specific.
Yeah.
but it gets to what could be a useful sort of format or way of understanding who you might hire or where you want to go in your career.
Yeah. It's kind of like a nice to have section of a job description where it's like, here's all the responsibilities we're expecting of you. Here's all the things that are nice to have, which would be, I guess, on your resume, something you would have with a lower progress bar showing that you know it a little bit, but it's not your main thing. One thing that I wonder about is like, as you mentioned, like going from, this is different in different companies, so you'll experience different levels of responsibilities with the different job titles at different companies and orgs. Is it your responsibility as somebody who maybe can flex in a bunch of different areas to kind of conform to your org structure and like stay in your lane? Or should you constantly be pushing the boundaries because you know that you can do something particularly well and you are like used to doing that in previous roles?
There are some extremes And yeah, we're getting relatively close to career advice here, but there are some extremes that you can think about, I think, there where, let's say you have a manager or a colleague who is dedicated to a specific responsibility, like research. And you are also great at research. And so you keep sort of going around them and organizing your own sort of research events, you know, usability tests or interviews with people. And so maybe you're getting some great results, but actually that other person's been hired to do the research and you've been hired to do, let's say you're purely on visual design duties on like the website. That feels a little bit, it's not quite petty, but it's sort of, you're intentionally sort of being the antagonist in the situation. Mm. I guess there's probably a structured way that the company wants you to approach that, where you try and apply for a different role or you sort of make a move sideways into a different role. And so it always feels to me like that's a bit cheeky. But having said that, I mean, that is an extreme where you're doing a very specific thing that someone else has been hired for. If you're a sort of startup and you're branching out, I think probably people would look on that a bit more kindly, just because everyone wants someone else to wear as many hats as they can and leave less hats for them.
Mm.
But that gets to the reason why I am sort of against that idea on its principle. It's just that personally, I'd rather avoid making too many decisions, because that's scary, right? Making decisions is scary. And so even if I am quite good at research, well, it's not decisions in this case, but let's say research is quite annoying to organize, which it is, finding participants, arranging the meetings and everything. If there's a dedicated researcher who's doing all that, fantastic. I'm happy to let them take on all the research responsibilities and I'll just read the reports. Because even though I think I'm relatively good at research, interviewing people, it's the stuff around it that bothers me, or it's the time commitment.
Mm-hmm.
And so it doesn't necessarily feel like I have a responsibility to do those things just because I'm good at them. Because maybe I'm good at them, but don't want to do them.
Right.
Or maybe I want to do them, but I'm not good at them, in which case, you know, but I don't know that, you know, in which case maybe those boundaries are a good thing.
Yeah, that's a tricky one to navigate.
I'm sure we all know developers who we wish would have less design opinions.
Yeah.
And probably developers all know designers who they wish would have less development opinions.
Yep, definitely. Yeah, that's interesting. I think that you do sort of need to like understand your place and respect the boundaries of people's roles and not step on toes, but it can still help you to have that experience. Like, you can acknowledge that you are good at research and it just means that you'll have a better relationship with the person doing the research and you can talk about it more easily and give better feedback. So you have to like learn how to flex it in a different way versus being the person doing everything yourself, which is like a different kind of feeling. And I think maybe that comes with seniority as well. Like, you sort of are letting go of some control, but still being a part of the conversation as you get higher in your career.
Yeah. So I'm curious, do you have any opinions about what some good role definitions are based on some of these and others that maybe we didn't write down, but some of these skills or responsibilities?
Well, I'm going to skip over front-end development and design being separate because, you know, I'm struggling with that. And I'll start with content design because I feel passionate about that one. That's one of the skills you mentioned. And I think it's a role that does exist. Like, you can be a content designer, which I guess means you're essentially a writer. Part of what you're doing is writing, but you're communicating with words, like, for a marketing site or even like a documentation site is another one where I think content designers are really useful to kind of create a cohesive voice for the company. And I think that's a role that I see get cut a lot when we look at like layoffs. It's also one that's probably difficult to hire for because I think it's like a smaller thing. And I think it's one that maybe, I wonder if there's any other jobs that could kind of fall under. I mean, I think oftentimes product designers are also doing content design, but I'm not sure that they're qualified to be doing content design.
Maybe marketers would do a lot of content stuff.
Maybe even research.
I mean, they're doing a lot of promotional content.
True.
We had at my last company, there was a consultancy team. And so they would go out and do sort of custom reports for people based on the data we had access to. because people didn't want to have to pay for a platform, get access to the data, sort of gather all the data themselves, and then have to write their own report. So they would pay us, who we were experts in using our own platform, to write them a 12-page report that would make them look like, you know, industry thought leaders, whatever it happens to be. And so they were writing a lot of content, and we'd also do our own yearly report, which was, I guess, there for marketing, but there was a lot of effort that went into it to produce a report that talked about the state of the industry. And so I guess that consultancy team was doing a lot of content design because they were writing it themselves and also deciding how to package it up. We were bringing in a lot of branding stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I assume content designers also think a lot about the structure of that content. Like if you are going to have a DIY sort of self-help website, I've not met or talked to many content designers, but I assume they're not just writing the sort of self-DIY content, they're also deciding how it should be structured, or would they need an information architect on board? Oh. Or actually, is there a lot of overlap between those two things?
Yes. You just reminded me of something I saw on Twitter yesterday. Figma just released like a new feature that lets you like multi-select things and like edit different things all at the same time. And there, somebody posted, I'm assuming someone from the brand team, but now I'm curious because we're talking about like different roles. They posted a video of like a draft sketch of how they were going to create the demo video for this new feature, which is another interesting layer of content design. Like, how do you explain a feature for an app? And it was very cool. It was like, it kind of demonstrated how a lot of these different roles probably need to interact, because you need to understand the feature. You need to understand how to visually showcase the feature in like a succinct way for like a probably 30-second video for social media. And then there's all kinds of motion and animation and probably maybe 3D modeling, sound design, content, again, like words. So maybe, yeah, this is one that is kind of like cross-disciplinary, depending on the application of the skills. Hmm.
I saw a tweet from someone. It's not called a tweet anymore, is it? I saw a post from someone.
Whatever.
At Figma, and they mentioned the release of multi-edit, and then they linked to three other threads that other people from Figma had written about the feature. And so they were basically being a signpost and saying, here's what I'm telling you about multi-edit, and then go and look at these other three people who work at Figma and what they've said about multi-edit. And so it seems like they've had this multi-prong approach to multi-edit sort of marketing. Because there's a chance that each of those people who was involved really wanted to write posts about it and threads about it. And so they just did that. And then someone at Figma who's maybe more involved in the community side thought, oh, okay, I'll go and sort of gather these up into one thread. Or they said to the team in advance, oh, if you could write your own thread about your experience of creating this, that's great. In which case, it's like quite a, it seems like a more orchestrated, is that the right word? A more orchestrated approach to marketing a new feature than we often see, especially on a place like X and or Twitter.
I think...
So I found that interesting.
I also find it very interesting. And I've personally... This does kind of lead into like how things should be split up. I think this... Well, the more we talk about this, the more I'm like making connections between these things. But I think content design is actually a really important skill for product designers, even if you're not doing content design in the traditional sense. But I've been doing kind of like demo videos at work more recently, showcasing something I've done, and being able to tell a story in under a minute of like a feature that you added or some improvement that you made, I think it's just really, it's helpful for many reasons. It's fun to do. It's fun to learn how to do that. Anytime you can improve your storytelling skills, I think that's pretty important. It's also helpful for career growth, showing your worth, showing your value, and then just communicating with your peers better about what you're up to. So yay, content design.
I'm sure you've heard of the approach some people take where they write, or some companies, where they write a press release for a feature before they've ever built or designed the feature. And so that they're using that as a way to look at the outcome they want and then work backwards to how do we achieve that outcome?
Yep.
Which is quite interesting because I can see how it's useful to focus on the outcome and then work backwards to the solution, if you will. Or the not the problem. That's the outcome, which is the solution to the problem, and then work backwards to the execution, like how you actually solve it. But that also means that someone needs to be able to write a press release. And that's a skill that I think most designers would expect not to have to do.
Yeah.
Like you said with your 1 minute videos, if you can explain the problem and the solution sort of very easily and succinctly so that other people understand, then actually that probably makes you better at designing that solution for that problem. Because first of all, you've shown that you can understand the problem well because you've explained it sort of short and concisely. And you're showing that you've thought about how to solve it and how that solution will look to people outside the company. Because that's often something we don't think about. We sort of can't see the forest for the trees. We get lost in an avenue.
Yeah.
And then we think it's fine because we're used to it, right? We've designed it. We're very familiar with it. And we show it to someone else and they say, I don't understand what this thing means.
Right.
And that's, you know, the CEO of the company or someone that they're very intimately familiar with the product as well. And they don't understand it. So you've, maybe you could have got around that earlier on. But then, yeah, you have to be able to sit down and write a one-page document that does that. And that's quite a different skill from just writing copy for the interface.
It's so difficult. You're boiling down potentially like a year's worth of work into like a minute. And it can feel like I'm skipping over all the important stuff. But it really forces you to realize like what is the important things that other people are going to care about. And it makes it look like your work was very easy, even if it was really challenging. So.
All right. That's not ideal. Yeah. Maybe we shouldn't use that approach.
I do think it's successful I think you will see some success with doing that. But how about you? Is there any, how would you split these things up? Is there anything you want to focus on from this list?
Well, I am going to touch on what you said you wouldn't touch on, which is design and development, because
I want to hear your perspective.
It's a hot topic. And so I think the future ideal is that the same people are both designing and developing at least part of the eventual, you know, result. And hopefully design and development in those cases aren't different. They are the same thing. So right now we're moving pixels around on a canvas. Ideally in the future, we're potentially still moving pixels around on a canvas, but that's having a direct effect on the thing that gets shipped.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a translation that has to be done between the thing you draw and the thing that gets shipped. You are just drawing the thing that gets shipped. So I like those combinations. I think, assuming AI gets much better, and it's hard to know whether it will or won't, you know, the sort of generative AI side, assuming that all gets better, maybe things like 3D modeling, illustration, they will all be able to fold into one person's role much more easily.
Mm.
And so you still might want someone who's dedicated to it, even if they're using AI as well, just so you get sort of more taste concentrated in one place and they're more choosy and they can explore things for longer and you probably get better results out of that. But if I need a quick illustration, like a doodle of a pen, for example, for a little edit icon, I don't necessarily need an illustrator on staff. I need to be able to type pen doodle into a tool and have it spit out something that suits our style. And so maybe that's not as good as someone else could do if they had more time, but it's probably good enough.
Yeah.
Right. So I don't think those things should belong with a sort of a standard interface design role, but I think they could in the future, just like development could. Right now, it feels like all those things need to be separate just because the way we work on them is not really compatible.
Mm.
But I do like, for example, which is quite a common split, if someone works on both the app and the website for the app, and they are
the marketing
different
website.
Skills in. Yeah. Okay. And that's also about storytelling, right? You're figuring out how to tell the right story about the thing you're designing. It's just like the method we were talking about where you write the press release at the start. And they do feel like different skills, even though they're much closer than, for example, writing a press release and designing the interface. But it's very helpful in a practical sense because you can use the same visual language across both. And otherwise, the marketing team and the product team or the platform team might be pulling in different directions, and that's bad.
Yeah.
But it's hard to know how to fit these into sort of sensible roles that don't just reflect my personal preferences, because that's what I want to do or that's what I'm good at.
I know. Yeah. Like I'm not sure I fully agree with that one from my own personal perspective, because I feel like oftentimes the marketing sites are so much more expressive than the apps, but they need to have some kind of connection. But I don't think I would have fun trying to do an expressive, exciting marketing page, because it just wouldn't be exciting. It would be probably pretty dull for the kind of app that I'd be working on. But I don't know. It's interesting.
One of the things I wrote down here was visual design polish. And I don't think this is that common, but I've heard about it a few times, and it's also an idea I've had in the world of sort of physical construction. Like if you get some builders in to build you a new bathroom or a new kitchen or something, often there's a few things after the fact that you see it and you think, oh, they haven't done that to the highest standards, like the corners or the edging or something. You know, they've been doing so much stuff that they haven't had time to go through and make sure that it's all pixel perfect in the real world.
Yeah.
And it's the same when you're designing a whole platform or something. And there's this concept of people who come in after the fact and basically look through it, and they are there to polish it.
Yeah.
And so that's potentially a different skill, or it's potentially something that happens at the same time, but they are dedicated to that. So they've got the time. Whereas there are people who are sort of building out the scaffolding and the large pieces. Mm-hmm. These people focus on the smaller pieces, the very small details. And so it feels like maybe that shouldn't be part of the same role because they're different mindsets. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're building out an entire platform, 60 pages of forms or something, you don't necessarily want to be thinking about the ideal pixel placement of every button or the rounding or anything. A lot of that can be taken care of by design systems. There might still be some things left over,
yeah,
custom screens or whatever, where someone needs to come in and polish it up.
Yeah, this really is one where I'm not sure you can do it simultaneously. Like we talk about design and development trying to work in tandem, like kind of pushing and pulling. But within engineering, I think this is probably more so a limitation of engineering. Assuming you're building some brand new experience and you've got some massive pull requests with 70,000 changes, and then a designer comes along and is like, the button is 2 pixels off from the center or something. They're like, dude, I don't care about that right now. I'm just trying to get this new thing built. I'm not asking for that kind of feedback. So it really does have to, I'm not sure it has to come after you ship the thing, but it often does. I wish there was like another step of like, okay, we have merged, we're deploying a preview, and now finally we're ready for feedback. But usually what happens is you go public with it and then some designers get put on the polish side. But I think it's such a critical part of the flow and one that we've been experimenting more with at GitHub. And it seems like such tiny little changes, but they're so impactful because they really do improve the quality overall if you can get these little tiny consistency things correct. And I think that's a really good role for a designer developer, because it's a lot faster to just go in and fix it yourself versus filing an issue for the 2 pixels or whatever. Like there's so many little things. Sometimes it's just easier to go in and do it on your own. So maybe that's kind of more the future of this like AI stuff, curation, but also polishing what AI is giving to you and like refining it.
Yeah. And that, I think that lines up with my ideal vision for someone who both designs and develops, but by doing the same action, not separately, is that I think my ideal design process is not that the designers do their thing and then the developers do their thing. It's that actually the developers go first. And in a discussion, maybe you just write out a document, like on this page, we need these things. And the developer goes in and puts up all the scaffolding. It's probably wrong to call it scaffolding, but they put in like the basic building blocks of that. And maybe it's just a plain looking HTML page with everything you've asked for from top to bottom, and it's all plumbed into the data, right? Test data, whatever. Yeah. And after the developer's done that work, the designer comes in and works directly on the final thing. And they do all that polish work where they're saying, okay, this is how I want the layout to be. This is how I want these pixels to be aligned, all these things. And so the developer doesn't have to care about the designer's needs there. They're just putting it all in and getting it working. And the designer's coming in and doing that polish stage, which they normally would do up front in a sort of a classic design process where they're making all those decisions up front. And then the developer's trying to recreate it. Actually, there's no recreation. You are creating, and then the developer or the designer is adjusting.
Yes.
And then finally, maybe the designer has identified a few things that the developer has to come in and handle, sort of
like data.
Like maybe it's a custom tweak or something. It's like, oh, I really like an animation here, and we don't support that with our library. So could you add a custom thingy here? And this is how it should work. There'll always be some cleanup there, but that's my ideal, because I don't think the developer should have to wait for me to finish visual designs when I already know what should be on the page.
Yes.
The priority of things and how they're structured and everything. We should be able to do that essentially in parallel.
Yep. This is also my ideal. And I've only experienced it one time, like working, this was for a side project though. This is not like a professional thing where I was working with like more of a back end person, and he would just come in and make all the data available in the front end for me. Like, I think we were using Vue.js for this project, and it was so much more fun because then I could just not care about any of that stuff, because I still don't care about back end or data or databases or anything. It's exciting when it's happening. I don't want to be the person to set it up, but I want to manipulate it. But I often wonder how the developer feels about that, about this configuration. Like, are they happy doing this, or do they wish that they could also do what the designer's doing? And I think oftentimes they think that they can do that. Here's a scenario of where you can do something, but should you? Maybe they can't do it as well as a designer could. So it's just like, it depends again on those boundaries, but that's my ideal scenario. Having a backend person that's like, I don't care what this looks like at all. I'm just going to give it to you. And then you make it perfect. And that's like dream team. But I think that's kind of hard to find.
The other situation similar to that is I've heard about when developers have been very kind to designers and they've given them, let's say, an animation they've built, and they've given them loads of sliders they can play with, like in the interface. And so they can, or maybe there's a tool they use for it or something. And so they can tweak the sliders because they don't have to care about easing values or something. They're just tweaking it until it feels right.
Yeah.
And it's almost like a sandbox environment that developers build for the designers to, because the developers don't care what the values are and they don't want to have to tweak them based on some random feedback or some vague feedback from the designers every time. Maybe it is even quicker to build that interface or to have it as one of your standard tools and then to say, here's the animations for this, this, and this screen. Please go in and tweak them. And then as soon as you hit save, it will be in the database or in the CSS, whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And so that feels similar, where you're basically saying the interface is mostly done, but for these really taste-based, like minute details, we're not going to do a standard feedback loop because that'll take, you know, days.
Yeah.
I'm just going to give you this tool and you can move these sliders around, change them to whatever pixel values you want, whatever it happens to be.
Yep. Tell me what you want. We'll make it happen. That's the best kind of interaction you can have with an engineer.
Yeah. I don't know if we really covered what the sort of ideal role should be. We got into some specifics there, but specifics is probably better than I was making proclamations.
Well, we're speaking from experience. So I think we're sharing our own part of this list, our own experience with parts of this list. Yeah. Anything else we should cover on this topic, or do we hit it all?
I think we could probably take any two, three of these items in the list and have a long conversation about how they might combine or how they interact. So there's probably a lot more we could cover, but we probably shouldn't.
Well, maybe if there's any listeners that are interested in hearing us kind of deep dive into any of the other items on this list, let us know. And we could do another verse episode. We could do, I don't know, growth versus product marketing.
Growth versus anything, because growth is not controversial, but it definitely impacts everything about interfaces.
Yeah. Great. Okay. Well, thanks everyone for listening this week, and we'll catch you in the next one.
Yeah.
Look at us, 34 minutes.